This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 340. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Morrison's Guidebook, Joker Forever, Gus is Back, and Tommy Taylor Rides into the Sunset. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, February 1st, 2015. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe in iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Now, Mark, before we start talking about comics,
yes,
I just want to comment that I love this time of year when it's cold and snowy because I can sit inside and read all day if I want to. And I have caught up on my comics.
Woohoo!
Yay! So, there.
The Multiversity Guidebook by Morrison, Toe, and Seguera. Well, this was supposed to be just some background info, and I'm wondering if the people reading Multiversity, if everybody even picked this issue up, because this really smacked of money grab by DC.
Right, the solicitation for it did.
Absolutely.
But then when you read it, it's like...
it's a major part of the story.
Seems like, oh, this could be important.
Now, we are going to talk about the guidebook portion in a special episode next week. But now let's go on to the story. The Legion of Savannahs from the Thunderworld issue are swiftly destroying the mini-heroes of Earth 42, one of whom has this very issue in his pocket. I love that.
So that's the Little League.
Yes. So yes. One of the Savannahs actually has the issue you're reading right now in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
When the Batman of Earth 17, where there was a nuclear war in 1963, and now it's 50 years later, and this is where the Atomic Knights are based, finds himself on Earth 42 and allying with Batman 42.
Who is the little Batman.
The little Batman. The Marvel family's closing in, so the Savannahs bug out. Batman 42 reads the comic, which leads us to Earth 51, where we see Commandy and the Great Disaster, along with a new version of OMAC called Biomac, and they're breaking into this secret cache. While the new gods watch, Commandy finds secret writing and reads about the birth of the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very biblical. In the beginning, there was light, and then there was a flaw that resulted in the monitor and the anti-monitor, as well as the multiple universes.
So it was sort of like if God and the devil were created at the Big Bang or something.
Exactly. And then Morrison ties together, in a matter of a few pages, Barry Allen discovering Earth 2, the first team up with the JLA and JSA, the Cosmic Treadmill, the Crisis on Infinite Earths, Zero Year, Infinite Crisis, Hyper Time, and Flashpoint, and the Hand of God at the Dawn of Time.
Yes.
So he is pretty much, in a few pages, tied together all the major events in the history of DC Comics.
Okay.
And then Biomac finds the other issues of Multiversity just kind of laying around. Back on Earth 42, Batman's 42 and 17 discuss the comics they find, including Batman Little Gotham, which is the basis for Earth 42. And realize they need to get out of there. The book then goes into the Guidebook of Worlds, and again, we'll talk about that next week. Back to the story. Nix Uatan, now of the Gentry, finds Commandy. Batman's 42 and 17 open this energy door and they escape. Batman 42 goes to Earth 17, and 17 goes to the Orrery of Worlds, and they, at that point, receive the SOS from issue 2, And then back on Earth 42, we learn the mini heroes are just robots controlled by apparently the hand of God.
Okay.
Wow.
So this really does seem like it's building up into being a major reboot at Convergence, doesn't it?
Well, there's the theory that Morrison has been working on this in various ways because he's referencing other earlier works he's done.
Uh-huh.
That this is long before Convergence was even a glint in Dan DiDio's eye.
Yes, but it conveniently came along
at just the right time.
You know, I mean, they've been delaying it for so long, right?
Right.
So now they have it when they need it for Convergence.
Exactly. So in the next issue, we will see the Mastermen and Earth 10. And again, we'll cover the actual guidebook next week. Batman number 38 by Snyder and Capullo. Well, the Endgame storyline continues to ramp up, and a new version of the Joker virus has taken over Gotham, including Jim Gordon. And it turns people into maniacs and then essentially burns them out and kills them.
And this has nothing to do with the virus over in the JLA that's turning people into, I don't know what.
No, super... that's in Metropolis.
Yeah, this is just ridiculous. I'm going to talk more about this at the end. I'm sorry.
Bruce and Dick communicate over the radio. Bruce orders his team to get out, of course, because he has to do everything himself. And tells Dick that Joker actually knows who Batman is. Which I thought they already knew that he knew. I don't know.
Well, otherwise, how would he have done all that stuff in, you know, Death of the Family?
Right. But I thought that, yeah, I don't know. Batman goes after a doctor from a black budget Wayne Industries project who may have the answer, which he does. The doctor explains that the virus is from the Joker's blood, and the Joker is basically immortal and has been around since early Gotham. And it's a form of the same thing that powers Vandal Savage and the Lazarus Pits.
I did not like that.
Everyone else exposed to it goes nuts and dies, and there's no cure. Leaving Bruce no choice, he has to go back and ask the Owls, remember them, for help. And then there's a backup story by Tinian the Fourth and Keith, which is more just background material.
Okay, this is my problem. Everything has to be world ending. In the DC universe now. We've got like 8 different storylines going on in different books where everybody's dying of something and we have to, and then there's going to be no repercussions from them at all.
Well, I think this is yet another sign that Convergence is going to be a reboot because creating these massive events, as you said, that have no repercussions and are really going to screw up the continuity. It's like, yeah, you're doing a reboot.
Now, to me, this really reminds me of the superhero movies and how when we talked about those and the fact that, you know, they would be so much better if it wasn't a world-saving battle at the end of every movie,
right,
you know?
Right.
And it's the same in the comics. You can have really good stories without having these massive events. It's just they're too lazy to do it.
Yeah. Vertigo Quarterly Black by... Francavilla, Yang, Siegel, Christensen, Bailey, Morris, Choi, Galvin, King, Leon, Spencer, Malavia, Moon, and Lemire. This is the last of the 4 color-based anthologies.
Yay!
And I wouldn't even bring up this issue, except for the Jeff Lemire story. It's a new Sweet Tooth story that frankly is worth the cost of the book.
We just loved Sweet Tooth.
So it's a prequel during the period while Gus and his father hide out in the cabin. So for those who didn't read Sweet Tooth, the concept is some sort of plague, either aliens or biblical, it's never really fully explained, has wiped out most of Earth's population, and in attempts to save themselves, they created this other virus that created animal-human hybrids. So Gus is this young boy who's a part deer, and so he has antlers.
Mm-hmm.
Gus's daddy teaches him that the stars at night are God's light watching over them. Gus is out playing one day when he finds himself near the fence of the sanctuary, a place his father said never to cross, never to go outside. Gus finds a skunk boy in a trap just outside the fence who's begging for help. Gus wavers and then runs away, and his father praises him later, but now all Gus sees in the night sky is black. He doesn't see the stars anymore. And yeah, there are other stories in the book, whatever. They're all very artsy. I doubt I'm going to sign up for the next set of anthologies, unless there's a story like this in there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Unwritten Apocalypse number 12 from Vertigo by Carrion Gross. So we've come to the end of this series that was extended for little or no reason. Basically, they reset it to an issue one and then did this 12 last issues. It could have just been one story. It really feels like to me, you know, you can argue whether they went off the tracks on this title, or I'm sure Vertigo's editors are like, no, we expanded the concept. But it's like,
no. It really did seem to lose its traction at some point. And
yeah. So we start at the end with Wilson living alone, and then we go back where Wilson has written all his sins in a cave with the magic quill. And Tommy explains that the only important words he's written are Tommy's name, because those are what actually contains the magic. He's come up with a plan, which seems kind of obvious, really. Wilson writes out Tommy's story and then controls the narrative, which ends up controlling the world. And the rest of the group aren't told about the plan until it's too late for them to do anything about it. So the bunny sends Wilson back into the real world so he can do this. The team attacks Pullman and Roush, and Pullman blows the horn, which is supposed to end the universe, and then they all find themselves on Moby Dick's Pequod, where Wilson sent them via his writings. Lizzie and Richie are written out of the story, leaving only our hero and the villains.
Mm-hmm.
Then Leviathan arrives, as this, of course, is the huge whale, and swallows the ship, ending the story.
And probably curing Leviathan and thus resetting the world back to
the
its normal way.
So Wilson's unwritten book is rejected by the publisher for being too weird, and I agree. Richie wins a Pulitzer writing about the French prison that was in an earlier part of the story. He finds happiness with the comic writer Ghost Lady. Mr. Bunn returns to Willowbank Wood. Lizzie and Danny meet and start a relationship. We check in on Frankenstein and the Wooden Army and the policewoman in Brisbane and basically just kind of tie up those particular storylines in one panel each.
Yeah, it was like a little bit of an epilogue for everyone.
Tommy is forgotten, except for Wilson. He leaves Mingus the Cat to fend for himself and begins the walk down the long staircase, and then a few of our cast watch him go.
But did you see the cat followed him down the staircase?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot happening in this last issue, but again, this title could have used some editing.
It just got too weird at the end, and I know Vertigo is weird and everything, but and maybe it would be better if you read it all at once in a novel format.
This really, as most Vertigo titles, lend itself far more to the trades. All right, sorry there's no Who's on the Cover this week, because last week was a double issue. Damn you, double issues!
It was the Oscar issue, in case anyone has forgotten.
Yeah. So, want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. Subscribe via iTunes and leave us a review.
Email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter @sfppn or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. Finally, you can call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP, and leave a voicemail.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.